This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. When President Franklin Roosevelt debuted the Second New Deal plan in 1935, it was the peak of unemployment in the United States. One-fourth of the country was out of work, and the president was tasked with creating new ways to aid his struggling nation.
The Second New Deal was even more ambitious and controversial than the first, and one of the standout initiatives was the creation of the Works Progress Administration, or WPA. The agency funded public works projects like building roads and bridges, but it also gave money to artists to create works for the public.
The program employed more than 5,000 artists whose works now offer a unique glimpse into life and values during the Great Depression. Some of those works are now on display at the Racine Art Museum. The pieces are part of its permanent collection, which includes more than 260 works from the WPA program.
The museum's executive director, Bruce Pepich, tells Bonnie North how these pieces ended up in the collection.
Well, you know, when you look back on your history as an institution, you realize how much happenstance and luck and timing are frequently a big part of what happens to make an institution a success or help it further its mission. And that even though you plan to take advantage of things, often something will come knocking on the door. And I think this is an instance where that happened. Our Charles A. Wooster Museum of Fine Arts campus on the northwest side of the town, when it opened up, it had no permanent collection. The Woostems were not art collectors. It was really functioning as an exhibition space with temporary shows. But the museum's first director, Sylvester Gerry, was a Wisconsin-born painter who then went on to go into the museum field in Michigan. And his last job before coming back to Wisconsin was to head the Michigan State WPA art program. And while he was in that position, he was hired to be the first director of the Wooster Museum. And in 1943, when they were starting to look for homes for some of this material, we were still in the middle of World War II and the government needed more storage, they contacted him and they were placing items in museums across the country, and that's how the collection arrived here. So we went kind of overnight from having nothing to having almost 400 individual pieces and also portfolios, primarily works on paper, prints, drawings, photographs, which is an interesting thing that we don't see that a lot in WPA collections, but also in our case, block printed textiles because of the Milwaukee Handicraft Project. The WPA collection here is about half of those works were made by artists from Wisconsin. The bulk of the other half were artists from the New York City WPA program. So we have people like Stuart Davis in the collection because of that with a print. We also have a small selection of things from Illinois and California as well, but primarily the collection is either Wisconsin or New York. So we've got people who in Wisconsin went on to become known, like Shomer Lichner, Santo Zingali, either as full-time artists or as artists and teachers. And in the New York collection, we have people who went on to become known as teachers on the East Coast and also well-known as exhibiting artists, as Stuart Davis.
You mentioned Shomer Lichner, and I, as I was walking around before we sat down, I found this wonderful ink drawing that he did of a man driving. It was like looking at the man driving the horse and wagon. And it's just this beautiful painted ink. And it's something, I mean, we tend to, those of us who knew Shomer Lichner in his later life, it was the ballerinas and the color and all of this, and this beautiful, elegant, very spare drawing that's so evocative.
It's almost like a Japanese or a Chinese brush drawing. It has that kind of strength and character of the line. The line is so important in that piece, and it's so stark because it's black and white, and I think we think so much of Shomer nowadays with his use of color, but to see that very stark kind of contrast of the black and white, it's really a very strong print, but it has almost an Asian sensibility to it. The pieces we have of his, and I think the WPA collection has about 10, and we have since filled in his and also Ruth Grotenroth's career through their trust via the Kohler Foundation's regifting of things from the Lichner or Grotenroth Trust. But the 10 pieces that were the original parts of our collection for so many years because of the WPA works, they're primarily rural images. They're not urban. They're blossoms on a fruit tree. They're scenes of people and farm life. And the Wisconsin collection, I would say probably two-thirds of the images are rural images, interiors and exteriors, but lots of farm scenes. And the other third are Milwaukee scenes. There's, you know, paintings of the third, you can see what block of the Third Ward the painting is, and you can tell the difference in time because there's old tin Lizzies parked instead of, you know, more modern cars. There's people on the street. There's a Lewandowski painting of the gas company Gas Works. It's such a an open window into that time period. One of the street scenes in a watercolor by Richard Jansen could be Milwaukee today, except there's a dirigible hanging overhead in the sky, you know.
Well, the thing about the WPA, it only lasted, what, about a decade?
If that,
yeah. And it, I understand it was, over the country, it was about 10,000 artists mm-hmm. that it employed doing various things, whether making prints or painting murals and that sort of thing. How important was the WPA to Wisconsin artists and to Wisconsin?
Well, I think it was incredibly important to artists everywhere because, you know, we've been through a terribly rough time in the last 15 years economically in this country, but our unemployment never got anywhere near the 20 to 25% rate that it was during the Great Depression. I don't think we can put our heads into that place as to how dire that must have been for people who were out of work. And particularly for artists, the whole support structure was gone. There were no public commissions. There were no collectors. No one was buying art. They had no money. Many people talk about the fact that New York became the center of the art world after World War II, and how did that happen? Well, part of it was that a lot of artists left Europe to get away from the Nazis, but also I think the fact that people like Jackson Pollock and Louise Nevelson and Stuart Davis were in the WPA program kept them working and also kept them fed and clothed. It helped make, many people theorize, it helped make a ground, preparing the ground for that next generation that took over in the 50s. Of course, the irony of that situation is that with abstract expressionism, all of this WPA social realism work was viewed as being very old-fashioned, and I think a reminder of a time that a lot of the young people wanted to forget and move on, and so many of these things were put away at most museums and not shown a lot. If it was a public mural, it was frequently painted over or removed. It was not treated with the respect that it deserved, and now we're you know, closing in 100 years pretty soon from that time period, it is really viewed with such affection on the part of the public because it is such an accurate depiction of the way people lived and felt at that time period.
And that's true for Wisconsin. I mean, mm-hmm. it seems like there were a lot of Wisconsin artists who were able to stay fed and housed and clothed because of the WPA money.
We've got somebody like Santu Singali who went on to teach at UW-Madison and lived a very long life as an artist and as a professor and as a kind of a role model and a mentor to younger generations of artists. And I think there are many instances of that. Some of the people disappeared. You know, it's just like art futures. You never know how long folks are going to stay career-wise in the field. But many of these people did go on to have names for themselves and to
like
make careers.
Schomer.
Yeah, like
yeah,
Schomer. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, Ruth, you know, and he and Ruth had exhibited. You know, they were in the New York World's Fair art exhibition, and I believe they had a couple of post office mural, you know, a couple of public mural projects via the WPA. So that this was good for people's careers in a lot of ways, and it was also wonderful for the public because at a time when people needed their spirits bolstered, the WPA paid for public art that was installed in place, it paid for traveling art exhibitions, it paid for playwriting and performance, it paid for music concerts, it paid for lots of things that would not have happened if it wasn't for that support. And we often chuckle because people who come in and in one breath will talk about how they don't want their taxes going to this or to that, and then they'll say, but I just love this WPA art. And we just sort of chuckle and say, you know, this was a federal program, and it was very controversial at the time. If you look at newspaper clippings on microfiche, it's fascinating how much resistance there was to all the public work projects, and then there was this sort of sense that how are we going to pay artists and not make sure we're wasting our money and that they're going to have their feet up on a desk all day long and just do a little doodle that'll then make them a day's wages. they actually had periods of time. You were given a certain amount of time to make a drawing, a certain amount of time to make a print, a certain amount of time to make a painting or a watercolor. And some of the watercolors, for example, on the back of the paper, it will actually state, you know, started on this date, completed on this date, almost like they're punching a time clock at a factory as the record of that they put their time in on creating the work. But this program went on through the first couple of years of World War II, so it went into the early, like we have pieces that are dated 1943 and 42. So the program did carry on, I think, as a transitional entity, at least until things became more solidified with the war effort. It's fascinating to me because we started a statewide watercolor competition, Watercolor Wisconsin, in 1966, and we were already then capturing the next generation of people who studied or viewed the work created by these WPA artists who were exhibiting as their elder peers and professionals, and also it taught in colleges and universities in the area. And we're now documenting a couple of multiple generations of painters in the state in the collection by doing this, because we acquire things from the watercolor show every year. And so to sort of track how things like realism and subject matter repeat generation after generation in this state, it's been an interesting thing to be able to look at that. And by looking at shows of older work like this, you can track that by seeing earlier generations doing similar work.
Other than people saying, oh, I really like this work, I mean, how are people responding to this? I mean, do they understand how it was created and why it was created and why it's important now?
We have little handouts that we've done. We've got a color handout with images that talks about the program, and the idea with that handout, it's, you know, like a 4-page piece, is that it will come out now every time we show work from the WPA, so we keep telling that story. And people may not know the specifics, Bonnie, but they really in general know what it was, because they know that the WPA built bridges and built hiking trails and built dams in parts of the country and did all of this very physical kind of public works project type work. Then they link into they kind of make that segue very quickly to understanding how the funding was made available, but they think it's kind of fascinating that it was spent to fund artwork. We do have signs up that talk about what the Works Progress Administration was and what the Federal Art Project was as part of that. You know, the most interesting thing I think about Wisconsin and the WPA is that the Milwaukee portion of the WPA was a handicraft project that started with recent graduates from Downer College who were art majors, and they went to the WPA and they designed wood blocks, and then they hired usually men to carve the blocks and women to block print cotton textiles that then were turned into drapes or table runners that could be used for city halls and public libraries. And the Milwaukee Handicraft Project was the first integrated program in the WPA in that it was both men and women working together, and also racially integrated. I believe about 30% of the participants were African American. Eleanor Roosevelt came to tour the program very early on because it was viewed as kind of a leader of its kind, and other programs like this were then set up in the U.S. based on the program. And they printed fabric textile samples that you could look at in bound volumes, sort of like looking at wallpaper samples in a wallpaper book, and then you could pick what you wanted. And some of the designs were very designy, kind of like M.C. Escher prints, and others were more naturalistic, still lives, animals in the landscape, and so forth. Still very abstracted, but you could really see what was going on. Then we have, in addition to quite a few of those samples, we also have about 4 large-scale wall hangings that were printed cotton. It's sort of like a muslin fabric, very thin cotton fabric, that were wall hangings that are part of this as well. And one of them, I must say, was given to us by someone who bought it in a garage sale here about 15 years ago. So you never know where things are going to show up.
Bruce Pepich is the executive director and curator of collections at the Racine Art Museum, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Bonnie North. The exhibition of art from the Works Progress Administration will be on display through June 4th. For more information, head to WUWM.com.
Say, buddy, can you spare a dime?
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.
Once in khaki suits, ah, gee, we look swell.